Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, if you've listened to us for a while, you probably recognize that this is a pretty eclectic show, which the name American Variety implies. We have over the last 4.5 years or so, we've had lots of shows on all different aspects of science and technology and arts and culture, and a lot of times just things that appeal to me, and they may be sort of non-mainstream or whatever. And in fact, that's a lot of what I try to do, is have things be interesting and different and, things that'll kind of pique the interest of a wide spectrum of my listening audience. And so today we have such a show, and my guest is Annette Martin, who is really a very well-known, renowned psychic. Welcome, Annette.
Well, thank you very much, Court. It's very nice to be on your show.
Annette's calling in. We're talking with her from California. And, you know, Annette is somebody who, you know, this is not like a Psychic Friends Network or, you know, a fortune teller or something. Annette is what I think of as the real deal in parapsychology. And I guess just briefly, let me give a little tutorial, if I may, since that's the kind of thing I do sometimes, right? So there's the hard sciences of chemistry and physics, and then the soft, what are called in science, the soft sciences. And I'm actually a scientist, so I know what I'm talking about to some extent here, and I'm a chemist. And this is soft sciences would be like psychology and sociology and anthropology. So they're things that are sort of intellectual, you know, where you can collect data, but it's not hard physical data most of the time in the sense that you can measure them with an instrument. It's more conceptual to some extent, or to a greater extent than is true in the hard sciences. So around the edges of psychology is something called parapsychology, which is sort of outside the realm of what official science recognizes, and I put official in quotes, right? But psychologists sort of shove parapsychology out of the light and into a corner out of some degree of embarrassment, I think, because it's sort of the embarrassing cousin or stepchild of psychology, and it's the study of what I think in general are called paranormal phenomena. And the biggest category of that, if you're following this taxonomy of sciences here, is ESP, or extrasensory perception, and that includes things that we all heard these terms, telepathy, precognition, and clairvoyance. And telepathy is sort of mind-to-mind transmission of thoughts, where, you know, reading somebody's mind basically is telepathy. And precognition, as you can tell from the word, is seeing an event in advance. And I think, you know, a lot of us have had like a premonition, even if it's just kind of a hunch or, you know, an instinct that something's about to happen, and it does. And so that's precognition, and people who have a very advanced sense of that can see like a whole scenario developing that's maybe 6 months in advance or 10 minutes in advance, I don't know. And then clairvoyance is seeing something clearly in your mind that's happening, not in someone's mind, not a thought, but seeing something that's actually happening halfway around the world or just around the block, and that's clairvoyance, or in French, clear seeing, right? So so those are the forms of ESP, and I think all of this in various ways is fascinating to many people, even if they don't talk about it much. And I was looking around a little bit, you know, on the web, that instant expert resource of information. And a National Science Foundation study a couple of years back found that 60% of the American population believe in ESP. And that's not necessarily to say that 60% of all people have had something happened to them, some sort of telepathic event or whatever, but 60% of people believe that it happens. And certainly you can look on TV and see, you know, shows like, for example, if you haven't watched John Edward on the Sci-Fi Channel, the show Crossing Over, you really should, whether you're a total skeptic about this subject or not. You should watch that, because I think it will convert a lot of skeptics. That guy is definitely the real deal. Another thing is Psychic Detectives on Court TV, and I've only watched it once or twice, and I don't even know if it's still on. But Annette, I believe you've been one of the people featured on Psychic Detectives in the past, have you?
Yes, I have. And in fact, I have a show that they keep repeating over and over and over again, and which was actually sold to NBC as well. My show was rated in the 10. They had 10 top shows from Psychic Detectives, and NBC wanted to have it also. So that was very good.
Well, I'd like to, I wish I could see that. What's the general topic or title of it, in case it comes up and people can get a heads up and watch it? Do you recall?
Yes,
Put you on the spot here, sorry.
Yeah, I put you on the spot.
All right, well, Google Annette Martin on Psychic Detectives, and you can find the title of the show
Yeah, it's called A Vanishing Paratrooper.
Okay. Well, that sounds interesting.
And and it's about a gentleman that they had been looking for 2.5 months. And the family called up the detective on the case and said, please, please, would you call Annette Martin, the psychic detective, and ask her if she can help to find him. And so, reluctantly, the detective called me, and he came down to my office. I'd asked him to bring a photograph and some maps, which he did. And within 20 minutes, I had drawn a line on the map telling them where this gentleman had gone to, and that he had been taking a hike, and he had veered off of the main road and taken this other little side road and was going to go sit up on a hill. But what happened was that he had a heart attack, and he died, and he fell off to the right of the road. So I drew this little tiny circle in acreage of this area, which was 2,000 acres of a park, and that's why they'd been looking for so long for him. They just could not find him. And guess what? They went out there, and there he was, exactly in the center of the circle that I had drawn.
So you found the needle in the haystack with no effort at all.
That's it.
Well, Annette has a book out, and actually it's not a book that Annette has written. It's a biography of Annette and her life called Gift of the White Light. And the author of this book is a man named James Frey. Did I pronounce that right, Annette?
James N. Frey.
Frey. Okay, so it's F-R-E-Y. And I guess you can find that through Amazon.com, and in fact, I did. I bought it on Amazon and read through it, and it's a fascinating book. And, you know, Annette didn't sort of graduate from college and say, gee, what do I want to do? I think I'm going to be a psychic. This started when you were a little child, right? As I think that it does with all people who are really the real deal, right? So why don't you maybe just plunge in, since I've sort of slid us in sideways into what you do now, but start back, Annette, and just tell us how you first realized that you had this psychic gift more than most people do.
Yes, well, it started when I was at the tender age of 7 years old. I had a wonderful and unusual new world began for me. I'd been playing with a group of my friends. We'd been playing Kick the Can, and I had a sudden vision in which I saw my playmates who would turn on me with intent to kill. And I just sort of ignored that, and we continued playing. And what happened was 10 minutes later, that vision became a reality. It was extremely frightening because they started to chase me with rocks and sticks, which is what I had seen in my vision. And I ran away from them and ran up my stairs and pounded on my door, totally forgetting that my mommy and daddy were at work. And I turned around and I faced them, and they continued to throw the rocks and the sticks at me. I started to bleed, and suddenly I heard this male voice say to me, "Pick up that stick." Oh, well, I thought it was my daddy, and so I turned around to the door again, and no one was there. Well, I turned back, and he said to me, "Pick up that stick and throw it." Well, I looked down at my right foot, and there was a stick about 13 inches long, and as I looked at that stick, I knew that I had to make a decision, a very, very important decision. Either I was going to listen to that voice, or I was going to die right there on my own steps. So I reached down, I picked up the stick, and I threw it, and I hit one of the little boys straight across the nose, broke his nose, blood went everywhere. Suddenly, all the parents came out of their houses, and they called the ambulance and took the little boy away. Well, my daddy and my mommy came home that night, and I told them what had happened, and my father said to me, "It's all right, it's going to be fine, and you just need to stay inside for 3 days, and then it's going to be okay, but then you have to go outside." And I said, "Oh, Daddy, they're going to kill me." He goes, "No, no, they won't. It's going to be fine." Well, sure enough, he was absolutely correct. Well, then what happened was about 2 weeks later, I was walking down Market Street in San Francisco, where I was born and being raised, and this lady walked by, my mother and I, and I said to my mother, "Mommy, Mommy, you see that lady? I said, that lady's got all these black bugs in her tummy, and she's got to go see the doctor right away." My mother just looked at me, "What?" she says, and I said, said, and I repeated it to her, and she said, oh, I'm sure she will, Annette. I said, oh, okay. And off we went shopping. Now, you've got to remember, I'm only 7 years old.
Yeah.
Well, what happened later was another couple more weeks went by, and this very dear friend of my mother's came over by the name of Pauline for lunch. After Pauline left, I came running out of the bedroom, and I said to my mother, Mommy, Mommy, you have to call Pauline, and you have to tell her that her big right toe really, really hurts, and she has to go see the doctor. And my mother just looked at me and said, Annette, if there was anything wrong with Pauline, she would have told me, because she tells me everything that is wrong with her. I said, well, no, you have to call her. And my mother said, I'll call her tomorrow morning. Well, the next morning came around, and the phone rang. Guess who it was? Pauline.
Yeah.
Pauline.
Okay.
And Pauline says, Viola, you won't believe what happened to me last night. I got home, and my big right toe began to swell up, and I was in so much pain, I couldn't stand it. It was excruciating. I went to see my podiatrist this morning, and he had to take the nail off. And he said, Mrs. Moses, I'm so glad that you came in, because this could have been a very serious problem. Well, that was all the beginning, and it just went on from there, Court. So at 7 years old, I was doing medical diagnosing.
Well, you're listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Annette Martin, who is a bona fide psychic of major dimensions, and recently a biography was written about her called The Gift of the White Light. And that story you were just describing was in the book. And the first phase of your, you know, as you went along, Annette, and, you know, went through your teenage years and then became an adult, and you weren't going to be a psychic initially, but you kind of went in sideways because you were doing this for friends, as you did for Pauline, you know, kind of inadvertently there at that time when you were a kid. But later on, there developed more and more of a demand for your skills and services because you were uncannily good at it, I guess. And so I think the first, is it true to say that the first kind of phase of your psychic life as an adult was the medical diagnosis that you were just describing then? Did you do that first?
I say that's very true. And, of course, I continued doing that. And what happened then is I started seeing things that were going on with my friends. And the worst part of it was I was going to Catholic school, Notre Dame de Victoire School in San Francisco. And I started picking things up about the nuns. Well, let me tell you, Court, that did not go over very well.
Was it?
I had to try to learn about how I could turn this off, because, you see, I really didn't want to be a psychic. I mean, that was not my intention in my life. My intention was to become either a very famous opera singer or a movie star and do musicals in the movies. And so this psychic thing was, you know, like, okay, I have to do this. All right, I'll do it, you know. But it was sort of over on the side, and certainly an advocation as far as I was concerned.
Kind of a hobby or a sideline.
Yes, yes, and it just kept blossoming. I mean, it just didn't stop, and people would find out that I could read them, and they started calling, and we had moved to Hong Kong. My husband was the general manager of the Fairchild Corporation over in Hong Kong, and as soon as we landed, and got settled, within 2 weeks the phone started ringing and people wanting to have readings. And at that point in time, I wasn't charging. And my husband said, look, this is getting ridiculous. People are calling day and night. You have to do something about this. And I said, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just tell them I'm going to charge. And as soon as I tell them that, it's going to stop. And he goes, good, okay. Well, the next morning the phone rings. And this British woman gets on the phone and she says she'd like to have a reading by me. And I said, well, you know, I'm terribly sorry, but because of the kind of life that we have and all the entertaining we do, I have to start charging for my readings. And she goes, oh, darling, that's just wonderful. When can I come?
Yeah, you weren't charging enough.
Oh, my goodness. So, and it just went on from there.
So you became a professional psychic rather than a, quote, amateur psychic, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. And that's just what happened, because I had not been charging up to that point in time.
So, you know, again, in my reading of the book, you did for quite a while, you did the medical diagnostic readings, which would be that people would come over and sit down, and I think you can describe it certainly better than I, obviously, but you go into a kind of a mild trance and then can easily see what's wrong with them, even if it's very subtle and something that that the doctors haven't been able to diagnose. You can see it, and you tell them frankly what it is, even if it's a kind of a frightening or maybe a terminal type of diagnosis, huh? But so
yes,
you were
doing
so you were doing that for a long time, and then at a certain point, you alluded earlier to finding the missing paratrooper or whatever or parachutist. And so you got into the psychic detective work. So why don't you tell us just a few stories about that? I mean, it's kind of things we've seen on TV, but you're the one there that's on TV being interviewed doing those things. So.
Right. Well, that was really a fluke also, because I had absolutely no intentions of ever working with the police. I mean, that was just the farthest thing from my mind. But what happened was we had returned to California, and I had set up a practice in my home and had a secretary, and we'd gone down to have a yoga class. And during the meditation part of the yoga class, as I'm laying on the floor, all of a sudden, I see this dead body hanging out over my body and a street sign. Well, let me tell you, it scared me half to death, and I sat up off of the floor, and my secretary sat up, what's wrong? And I said, it's okay, and I laid back down. After the class, she and the yoga teacher came over to me and said, what happened? And I told them what I saw, and they both said to me, oh, Annette, you have to go down to the Marin Sheriff's Office and talk to them. And I looked at them and said, what? Are you kidding? I'm a professional psychic. If I go down there and tell them I've seen a dead body, they're going to think I'm crazy. No, Annette, you have to go. So they finally talked me into it. I called my husband. He said, why not go down there? So I did. So I walked into the police department with my knees shaking because I was so scared. I'd never been in a police department before. And walked up and told the sergeant that I said, well, I'm a professional psychic and I've seen a dead body. Well, his eyes just got huge and he goes, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. He came back. And detective ushered me into and my secretary into an interrogation room. And this detective came in, and he sat down, and he announced himself as being Detective Sergeant Richard Keaton. And he said, what can I do for you? And I said, well, my name is Annette Martin. I'm a professional psychic, and you're going to think I'm crazy. And he looked me straight in the eye without blinking, and he said, no, I won't. And I believed him, and there was this synchronicity that happened between us. And he said, can I record this? And I said, absolutely. And I said, I've seen a dead body. This is what I've seen. And he goes, okay. And he said, can I bring something in to show you? Well, he did. And 5 hours later, I had given him all kinds of information about this particular case that had just occurred. It was a murder case. And he asked me to come back in the evening. The captain and a few of the fellows wanted to ask me some questions, and I said, fine. So we came back, walked into the room of about 20 to 25 people.
That's a little intimidating.
Very intimidating. There were 2 FBI men there, a judge, the sheriff, the district attorney.
Let me ask you this. How many of them had their arms crossed? Nearly
so
all?
Many.
most
many
of them.
Oh, my God.
Leaning back, squinting at you.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, who is this crazy lady?
All right. We're gonna put up with this.
And so I was terrified, and I thought, okay, Ned, you can do this. And what I did, I went back into my memory banks of when I sang at Bellas Artes in the theater. I was singing opera. I was singing Manon Lescaut. We had 3,000 people in the audience and a 60-piece orchestra, which was one of the highlights of my singing career. And I thought, okay, Annette, if you did that, you can do this. Okay, so I closed my eyes, and I pretended that I was in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so 5 more hours later, I gave them all kinds of information and told them that they would find this gentleman. I'd given them a whole MO on his medical diagnosing. I told him that he would try to kill again, that they would not find him in California, that he would be wearing white, and they would find him that from that day, a year from the day that we were sitting there and doing this.
Hmm.
And by God, they found him. He had tried to kill again, and he thought he'd murdered the girl, but she climbed out of the grave.
Oh, gosh.
And they found him working in a hospital, wearing white, exactly a day to the year.
Well, I would recommend your book, Gift of the White Light, Annette, to everybody listening. And again, the author is James Frey, F-R-E-Y, Gift of the White Light. And it's basically a biography, a hardcover book, just came out a few months ago, or a couple months ago, very detailed and very well written about Annette Martin, psychic. And there are many stories like the one that Annette just related that are, you know, detailed and interesting, fascinating stories. And I guess she's made believers of a lot of hard-boiled cops out on the West Coast and probably around the country. Annette, has this kind of, I don't know, what year was that story, just quickly, that you were just describing, roughly?
That year was 1975.
So that was, 30 years ago plus. Has this, excuse me for saying that, but, has this, you said you started when you were 7, so you're 37 now, but anyway.
Oh,
but,
of course.
There you go. But I think our listeners don't have to be psychic to, never mind. But has this kind of forensic psychic intervention become much more accepted or more widely accepted in the police world since that time?
Yes, it has. And in fact, after I did this first case, the two FBI men that were in the room when I was working on that particular case came forward about 3 weeks later and asked me to work on the Patty Hearst case as well as the SLA bombings that were going on in San Francisco.
The Symbionese Liberation Army. I remember that.
Right.
See, that shows that I'm over 37 also. But go ahead.
And what I have found is that throughout the years, a lot more detectives are far more open to this because, you see, detectives themselves are very intuitive. I mean, they sense, they feel, they get that gut feeling, they just know. They can tell when a stolen car is going down the road. I mean, they're incredible.
Yeah.
And
they're pragmatic. They want to solve cases, and if they see time after time that these things do get solved this way, then they're willing to try it, I guess,
That's right, exactly. What generally happens is they get to the end of the road where they can't find anything else, and so that's when they call me.
We're listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with psychic Annette Martin, who is a renowned psychic, and very much, as I said earlier, the real deal, a book just out about her called Gift of the White Light. By the way, you have a website. I think it's www.annette with two T's, right? And two N's,
right.
Two T's, A-N-N-E-T-T-E hyphen Martin, right? So MARTIN.com. So www.annettemartin.com. And I guess they can read a lot about you and your background and can buy the book there too, I suppose, huh?
Absolutely, they can go there. There's a button right over to Amazon, or they can call my publisher, which is 800-345-4447.
Well, then our last 5 minutes or so, Annette, I want to kind of switch gears and talk about how this works. I mean, kind of the stories are fascinating in and of themselves, but I'm interested in kind of how what the processes are and what generates this this gift or this ability. First, does everyone have this ability that you have in such abundance?
Absolutely. Everyone does. Every child comes into the world with six senses, and that's where it is. Now, I was just fortunate because I have intuition is very high in both sides of my family, and I call it my double whammy. And so my intuition was far more open than probably your average bear. And because I do believe that I'm a singer and that I can hear and feel the electromagnetic waves, that it makes it a little bit easier for me to pick up and tune into that.
Do you think maybe having an artistic temperament, just to put it more simply, lends itself to being psychic and maybe vice versa? Like it's the same sort of sensors?
I would say that it definitely helps, yes.
Okay.
It helps to fine-tune things. And also, I was trained in drama from a young girl, from the time that I was 9 until I was 17. And during that time, I had this incredible drama teacher who would have me do improvisations. And she talked about the white ball and to send the energy back and forth. And, of course, I knew what that was because I had been seeing white light ever since I was a little tiny girl, from when I can remember, maybe 2 or 3 years old. And so this little white ball, I understood of sending back and forth to a person and coming back to me, which also is tuning into those very subtle electrical energies that are around a person and which we call the aura.
Oh, yeah.
And so I am able to tune into that like a radio, okay? And I can also go to those energies that are coming from that person, and I'm also able to tune into my own energies of other information that I am receiving. So that's kind of my hypothesis of the way it works and how I see it.
So you're kind of like in your brain, there's a receiver, like a radio receiver, but it receives electromagnetic radiation of a subtler kind that's not known to science, let's say. And
exactly.
You're a receiver, and you can kind of tune it. I guess you don't get everything all at once. I hope you don't. But
no, I don't.
Let me ask you another. Yeah, that would be maddening or would drive you mad. You'd never sleep, for one thing. But
right. And what I had to learn to do at 11 years old, which I talk about in the book, is I had to learn how to turn it off.
Yeah.
You know? Because I was going crazy. I was picking up things about people, and it was disturbing my life as to what I was going to be doing.
You know, just in our last couple of minutes, you said earlier you got a double whammy from both sides, so I guess you got your whammy from your mammy, and never mind, that's a bad pun. But but the point is that you think this is genetic, do you?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Scientifically, I feel that it is highly genetic within my family, and which I have seen with other people that I have trained to become professional psychics. And if they have that in the family, there's more propensity for them to be more open to it. I also feel that has to do with personalities,
yeah.
A great deal to do with personality.
You know, I wonder, and I think other people may wonder this too, if there are so many psychics like yourself who, you know, people who know them and who have dealt with them realize are bona fide and can really see things. And again, maybe if you can answer this in 30 seconds or so, I wonder, why does no one foresee cataclysmic events like 9/11 or like the December 2006 tsunami where, you know, thousands or even, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are killed by a sudden event? Why don't people foresee that?
Well, I think there have been some people who have seen that, but and I have seen a lot of things that are catastrophic in the world, and it became so overwhelming. Like, who do you get in touch with? You can't call the President of the United States and say, "Hey, you know, I'm a professional psychic and I've seen this."
Yeah, but
who is going to listen to you?
Yeah, but still, I mean, you're plugged in enough to police and to FBI and so on. And gosh, we're just running out of time. And as always, I wish this were an hour show. And this is definitely something we could talk for a number of hours about. But certainly, half an hour isn't long enough. But I mean, still, there are people who know enough people that they could at least surface the fact that they foresaw it, even after the fact. You know, and even after the fact, it doesn't come out. So that part of it baffles me some. But I don't know what to make of that. But gosh, there's so many other things I would like to ask you about, Annette. You know, like how this all relates to religion is a whole other topic, and maybe we'll have you on again to talk about it again. But
wonderful, we can do that.
But again, the book is Gift of the White Light by James Frey, Frey, and you can go to www.annette-martin.com. Annette, thank you so much for being on. Thanks to all of you for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again same time, same place for more American Variety Radio.